Orion sang, and I felt the pull of it. It was strong, but not so strong that I couldn't hold myself back. I looked into the clearing again and saw her, skin silver-white under the evening sky. She bent to dip one hand in the water of the pool, more graceful than a dancer. A sudden clarity of thought came over me. What was I afraid of? A fairy story? There was magic here, real magic. What's more, it was a magic of singing. If I missed this opportunity, I would never forgive myself. I looked back again at my companions. Martin was shaking visibly. Tempe was backing slowly away. Daydan's hands made fists at his sides. Was I going to be like them, superstitious and afraid? No. Never. I was of the Arcanum. I was a namer. I was one of the Edema Rue. I felt wild laughter boil up in me. "I will meet you at the Pennyworth in 3 days' time," I said, and stepped into the clearing. I felt Valurian's pull more strongly now. Her skin was bright in the moonlight. Her long hair fell like a shadow all around her. "Saw this," I heard Daydan say behind me. "If he's going, then I'm go—" There was a short scuffle, ending with the sound of something hitting the ground. I glanced behind me and saw him face down on the low grass. Hespa had her knee on the small of his back and one of his arms pulled up tight behind him. He was struggling weakly and cursing strongly. Tempe watched them impassively, as if scoring a wrestling bout. Martin was gesturing frantically in my direction. "Kid!" he hissed urgently. "Get back here! Kid! Come back!" I turned back to the stream. Valurian was watching me. Even from 100 feet away, I could see her eyes, dark and curious. Her mouth spread into a wide, dangerous smile. She laughed a wild laugh. It was bright and delighted. It was no human sound. Then she darted across the clearing, swift as a sparrow, graceful as a deer. I leapt to the chase, and despite the weight of my travel sack and the sword at my hip, I moved so quickly my cloak flared like a flag behind me. Never have I run like that before, and never since. It was the way a child runs, light and quick, without the least fear of falling. Valurian ahead of me, into the scrub. I dimly remember trees, the smell of earth, the gray of moonlit stone. She laughs. She dodges, dances, pulls ahead. She waits till I am almost close enough to touch, then skips away. She shines in the light of the moon. There are clutching branches, a spray of water, a warm wind. And I have hold of her. Her hands are tangled in my hair, pulling me close. Her mouth eager. Her tongue shy and darting. Her breath in my mouth, filling my head. The hot tips of her breasts brush my chest. The smell of her like clover, like musk, like ripe apples fallen to the ground. And there is no hesitation, no doubt. I know exactly what to do. My hands are on the back of her neck, brushing her face, tangled in her hair, sliding along the smooth length of her thigh. Grabbing her hard by the flank, circling her narrow waist, lifting her, laying her down. And she writhes beneath me, lithe and languorous, slow and sighing, her legs around me, her back arches, her hot hands clutch my shoulders, my arms pressing the small of my back. And she is astride me, her movements wild, her long hair trails across my skin. She tosses her head, trembling and shaking, crying out in a language I do not know, her sharp nails digging into the flat muscles of my chest. And there is music to it. The wordless cries she makes, rising and falling. Her sigh, my racing heart, her motion slows. I clutch her hips in frantic counterpoint. Our rhythm is like a silent song, like sudden thunder, like the half-heard thrumming of a distant drum. And everything stops. All of me arches. I am taut as a lute string, trembling, aching. I am tuned too tight, and I am breaking. Chapter 96. the fire itself. I woke with something brushing at the edges of my memory. I opened my eyes and saw trees stretched against the twilight sky. There were silken pillows all around me, while a few feet away, Falurian lay, her naked body loosely splayed in sleep. She looked smooth and perfect as a sculpture. She sighed in her sleep, and I chided myself for the thought. I knew she was nothing like cold stone. She was warm and supple, the smoothest marble grindstone by comparison. My hand reached out to touch her, but I stopped myself, not wanting to disturb the perfect scene before me. A distant thought began to nag at me, but I brushed it away like an irritating fly. Falurian's lips parted inside, making a sound like a dove. I remembered the touch of those lips. I ached and forced myself to look away from her soft, flower-petal mouth. Her closed eyelids were patterned like a butterfly's wings, swept in whorls of deep purple and black with traceries of pale gold that blended to the color of her skin. As her eyes moved gently in sleep, the pattern shifted, as if the butterfly fanned its wings. That sight alone was probably worth the price all men must pay for seeing it. I ate her with my eyes, knowing all the songs and stories I had heard were nothing. She is what men dream of. All the places I have been, all the women I have seen, I have met her equal only once. Something in my mind screamed at me, but I was bemused by the motion of her eyes beneath her lids, the shape her mouth made, as if she would kiss me even while she slept. I swatted the thought away again, irritated. I was going to go mad, or die. The idea finally fought its way through to my conscious mind, and I felt every hair on my body stand suddenly on end. I had a moment of perfect, clear lucidity that resembled coming up for air and quickly closed my eyes, trying to lower myself into the heart of stone. It didn't come. For the first time in my life, that cool, taciturn state escaped me. Behind my eyes, Falurian distracted me. The sweet breath, the soft breast, the urgent, half-despairing sighs that slipped through hungry, petal-tender lips. Stone. I kept my eyes closed and wrapped the calm rationality of Heart of Stone around me like a mantle before I dared even think of her again. What did I know? I brought to mind 100 stories of Falurian and plucked out the recurring themes. Falurian was beautiful. She charmed mortal men. They followed her into the Fae and died in her embrace. How did they die? It was fairly simple to guess. Extreme physical stress. Things had been rather rigorous, and the sedentary or frail might not have fared so well as I. Now that I stopped to notice, my entire body felt like a well-wrung rag. My shoulders ached, my knees burned, and my neck bore the sweet bruising of love bites from my right ear down my chest and... My body flushed as I struggled deeper into the Heart of Stone until my pulse slowed and I could force the thought of her from the front of my mind. I could remember 4 stories where men had come back from the Fae alive, all of them cracked as the potter's cobbles. What manner of madness did they exhibit? Obsessive behavior, accidental death due to separation from reality, and wasting away from extreme melancholy. 3 died within a span of days. The 4th story told of the man lasting nearly half a year. But something didn't make sense. Admittedly, Falurian was lovely. Skilled? Without a doubt. But to the extent that every man died or went insane... No, it simply wasn't likely. I don't mean to belittle the experience. I don't doubt for a second that it had, quite naturally, deprived men of their faculties in the past. I, however, knew myself to be quite sane. I briefly entertained the notion that I was insane and didn't know it. Then, I considered the possibility that I had always been insane, acknowledged it as more likely than the former, then pushed both thoughts from my mind. Eyes still closed. I lay there, enjoying a quiet languor of a sort I'd never felt before. I savored the moment, then opened my eyes and prepared to make my escape. I looked around the pavilion at silken draperies and scattered cushions. These were only ornaments for Falurian. She lay in the middle of it all rounded hip and slender leg and lithe muscle shifting underneath her skin. She was watching me. If she was beautiful at rest, she was doubly so awake. Asleep, she was a painting of a fire. Awake, she was the fire itself. It may seem strange to you that at this point I felt fear. It may seem strange that only an arm's length from the most attractive woman in the world, I was suddenly reminded of my own mortality. She smiled like a knife in velvet and stretched like a cat in the sun. Her body was built to stretch. The arch of her back, the smooth expanse of her belly going taut. The round fullness of her breasts was lifted by the motion of her arms, and suddenly I felt like a stag in rut. My body reacted to her, and I felt as if someone were hammering at the cool impassivity of heart of stone with a hot poker. My control slipped for a moment, and a less disciplined piece of my mind started composing a song to her. I couldn't spare the attention to rein that piece of myself back in, so I focused on staying safe in the heart of stone, ignoring both her body and that nattering part of my mind forming rhyming couplets somewhere in the back of my head. It wasn't the easiest thing to do. As a matter of fact, it made the ordinary rigors of sympathy seem simple as skipping. If not for the training I'd received at the university, I would have been a broken, pitiful thing, only able to concentrate on my own captivation. Falurian slowly relaxed out of her stretch and looked at me with ancient eyes, eyes unlike anything I had ever seen. They were a striking color. The summer dusk was in her eyes. A sort of twilight blue. They were fascinating. In fact, with lids of winged butterflies. There wasn't any white to them at all. Her lips the shade of sunset skies. I clenched my jaw, split that chattering piece of myself away, and walled it off in a distant corner of my mind, letting it sing to itself. Falurian tilted her head to one side. Her eyes were as intent and expressionless as a bird's.
"Why are you so quiet, flame lover? Have I quenched you?"
Her voice was odd to my ear. It had no rough edges to it at all. It was all quiet smoothness, like a piece of perfectly polished glass. Despite its odd softness, Falurian's voice ran down my spine, making me feel like a cat that's just been stroked down to the tip of its tail. I retreated further into the heart of stone, felt it cool and reassuring around me. However, while the majority of my attention was focused on self-control, the small, mad, lyric part of my mind leapt to the fore and said, "Never quenched. Though I am doused in you, I burn. The motion of your turning head is like a song, is like a spark, is like a breath that billows me and fans to flame a fire that cannot help but spread and roar your name." Valorian's face lit up.
"A poet. I should have known you for a poet by how your body moved."
The gentle hush of her voice caught me unprepared again. It wasn't that her words were breathy, or husky, or sultry. It was nothing so tawdry or affected as that. But when she spoke, I couldn't help but be aware of the fact that her breath was pressed from her breast, past the soft sweetness of her throat, then shaped by the careful play of lips and teeth and tongue. She came closer, moving on her hands and knees through the pillows.
"You looked like a poet, fiery and fair."
Her voice was no louder than a breath as she cupped my face with her hands.
"Poets are gentler. They say nice things."
There was only one person I'd ever heard whose voice was similar to this. Illodin. On rare occasions, his voice would fill the air as if the world itself were listening. Falurian's voice was not resonant. It did not fill the forest glade. Hers was the hush before a sudden summer storm. It was soft as a brushing feather. It made my heart step sideways in my chest. Speaking thus, when she called me a poet, it did not raise my hackles or make me grit my teeth. From her, it sounded like the sweetest thing a man was ever called. Such was the power of her voice. Felurian brushed her fingertips across my lips.
Poet kisses are best. You kiss me like a candle flame.
She brought one of her hands back to touch her mouth, her eyes bright at the memory. I took her hand and pressed it tenderly. My hands have always seemed graceful, but next to hers, they looked brutish and crude. I breathed against her palm as I spoke. Your kisses are like sunlight on my lips. She lowered her eyes, butterfly wings dancing. I felt my mindless need for her slacken and began to understand. This was magic, but nothing like what I knew. Not sympathy or sigildry. Felurian made men mad with desire the same way I gave off body heat. It was natural for her, but she could control it. Her gaze wandered over my tangle of clothes and belongings strewn messily at one corner of the glade. They looked oddly out of place amid the silks and soft colors. I saw her eyes settle on my loot case. She froze.
Is my flame a sweet poet? Does he sing?
Her voice trembled, and I could feel a tenseness in her body as she waited for an answer. She looked back at me. I smiled. Felurian scampered off and brought back my loot case like a child with a new toy. As I took it, I saw her eyes were wide and wet. I looked into her eyes, and in a flash of understanding, I realized what her life must be like. 1,000 years old and lonely from time to time. If she wanted companionship, she had to seduce and lure. And for what? An evening of company? An hour? How long could an average man last before his will broke and he became as mindless as a fawning dog? Not long. And who would she meet in the forest? Farmers and hunters? What entertainment could they provide? Slave to her passions. I felt a moment of pity for her. I know what loneliness is like. I took the lute from its case and began to tune it. I struck an experimental chord and carefully tuned it again. What to play for the most beautiful woman in the world? It wasn't hard to decide, actually. My father had taught me to judge an audience. I struck up Sisters Flynn. If you've never heard of it, I'm not surprised. It's a bright and lively song about two sisters gossiping while they argue over the price of butter. Most people want to hear stories of legendary adventure and romance. But what do you play for someone out of legend? What do you sing for a woman who has been the object of romance for a mortal age? You play her songs of ordinary people. So I hoped. She clapped delightedly at the end of it.
More! More?
She smiled hopefully, cocking her head to make it a request. Her eyes were wide and eager and adoring. I played her Larm and his ale pot. I played her Blacksmith's Daughters. I played her a ridiculous song about a priest chasing a cow that I'd written when I was 10 and never even named. Felurian laughed and applauded. She covered her mouth in shock and her eyes in embarrassment. The more I played, the more she reminded me of a young country wife attending her first fair, full of pure joy, face shining with innocent delight, eyes wide in amazement at everything she sees. And lovely, of course. I concentrated on my fingering so as not to think about it. After each song, she rewarded me with a kiss that made it difficult to decide what to play next. Not that I minded horribly. I'd come to realize rather quickly that I preferred kisses to coins. I played her Tinker Tanner. Let me tell you, the image of Felurian, her quiet, fluting voice singing the chorus of my favorite drinking song, is something that will never, never leave me. Not until I die. All the while, I felt the charm she had on me slacken, bit by bit. It gave me room to breathe. I relaxed and let myself slide a little farther out of the heart of stone. Dispassionate calm can be a useful frame of mind, but it does not make for a compelling performance. I played for hours, and by the end of it, I felt like myself again. By which I mean I could look at Felurian with no more reaction than you might normally feel looking at the most beautiful woman in the world. I can still remember her, sitting naked among the cushions, twilight-colored butterflies dancing in the air between us. I wouldn't have been alive had I not been aroused. But my mind seemed to be my own again, and I was grateful for that. She made a disappointed noise of protest as I set the lute back into its case.
"Are you weary?"
she asked with a hint of a smile.
"I would not have tired you, sweet poet, had I known."
I gave my best apologetic smile. "I'm sorry, but it seems to be getting late." Actually, the sky still showed the same purple hint of twilight it had since I first woke, but I pushed on. "I'll need to be moving quickly if I'm to meet..." My mind went numb as quickly as if I'd been struck a blow to the back of my head. I felt the passion, fierce and insatiable. I felt the need to have her, to crush her body to mine, to taste the savage sweetness of her mouth. Only because of my arcane training did I hold on to any concept of my own identity at all. Even so, I only held it with my barest fingertips. Felurian sat cross-legged on the cushions across from me, her face angry and terrible, her eyes cold and hard as distant stars. With a deliberate calm, she brushed a slowly fanning butterfly from her shoulder. There was such a weight of fury in her simple gesture that my stomach clenched and I realized this fact. No one ever left Felurian. Ever. She kept men until their bodies and minds broke beneath the strain of loving her. She kept them until she tired of them, and when she sent them away, it was the leaving that drove men mad. I was powerless. I was a novelty. I was a toy, favorite, because it was newest. It might be a long while before she tired of me, but the time would come. And when she finally set me free, my mind would tear itself apart with wanting her. Chapter 97 Blood and Bitter Rue. As I sat among the silks with my controls slipping away, I felt a wave of cold sweat sweep over my body. I clenched my jaw and felt a small anger flare up. Over the course of my life, my mind has been the only thing I've always been able to rely on, the only thing that has always been entirely mine. I could feel my resolve melting as my natural desires were replaced by some animal thing unable to think beyond its own lust. The part of me that was still Kvothe raged, but I felt my body respond to her presence. With a horrible fascination, I felt myself crawl through the cushions toward her. One arm found her slender waist, and I bent to kiss her with a terrible hunger. I howled inside my own mind. I have been beaten and whipped, starved and stabbed, but my mind is my own, no matter what becomes of this body or the world around. I threw myself against the bars of an intangible cage made of moonlight and desire, and somehow I held myself away from her. My breath tore out of my throat as if racing to escape. Felurian reclined on the cushions, her head tilted up toward me. Her lips were pale and perfect, her eyes half-lidded and hungry. I forced myself to look away from her face, but there was nowhere safe to look. Her throat was smooth and delicate, trembling with her rapid pulse. One breast stood round and full, while the other angled slightly to one side, following the downward slope of her body. They rose and fell with her breath, moving gently, making candle-cast shadows on her skin. I glimpsed the perfect whiteness of her teeth, behind the pale pink of her parted lips. I closed my eyes, but somehow that only made it worse. The heat of her body was like standing near a fire. The skin of her waist was soft beneath my hand. She moved beneath me, and her breast brushed softly against my chest. I felt her breath against my neck. I shivered and began to sweat. I opened my eyes again and saw her staring at me, Her expression was innocent, almost hurt, as if she couldn't understand being refused. I nursed my small flame of anger. No one did this to me. No one. I held myself away from her. A slight line of a frown touched her forehead, as if she were annoyed, or angry, or concentrating. Falurian reached up to touch my face, her eyes intent, as if trying to read something written deep inside me. I tried to pull back, remembering her touch, but my body simply shook. Beads of sweat fell from my skin to patter gently on the silk cushions and the flat plane of her stomach below. She touched my cheek softly. Softly, I bent to kiss her, and something broke in my mind. I felt the snap as 4 years of my life slid away. Suddenly, I was back on the streets of Tarbian. Three boys, bigger than me, with greasy hair and piggish eyes, had dragged me from the broken crate where I'd been sleeping. Two of them held me down, pinning my arms. I lay in a stagnant puddle that was bitterly cold. It was early in the morning, and the stars were out. One of them had his hand over my mouth. It didn't matter. I had been in the city for months. I knew better than to yell for help. At best, no one would come. At worst, someone would, and then there would be more of them. Two of them held me down. The third cut my clothes off my body. He cut me. They told me what they were going to do. Their breath was horribly warm against my face. They laughed. There in Tarbian, half naked and helpless, I felt something well up inside me. I bit two fingers off the hand over my mouth. I heard a scream and swearing as one of them staggered away. I strained and strained against the one who was still on top of me. I heard my own arm break and his grip loosened. I started to howl. I threw him off, still screaming. I stood, my clothes hanging in rags around me. I knocked one of them to the ground. My scrabbling hand found a loose cobblestone, and I used it to break one of his legs. I remember the noise it made. I flailed until his arms were broken. Then I broke his head. When I looked up, I saw the one who had cut me was gone. The third huddled against a wall. He clutched his bloody hand to his chest. His eyes were white and wild. Then I heard footsteps approaching, and I dropped the stone and ran and ran and ran. Suddenly, years later, I was that feral boy again. I jerked my head back and snarled inside my mind. I felt something deep inside myself. I reached for it. A tense stillness settled inside of me, the sort of silence that comes before a thunderclap. I felt the air begin to crystallize around me. I felt cold. Detachedly, I gathered up the pieces of my mind and fit them all together. I was Quoth the trooper, Edema Rue born. I was Quoth the student, Relar under Elodin. I was Quoth the musician. I was Quoth. I stood above Falurian. I felt as if this was the only time in my life I had been fully awake. Everything looked clear and sharp, as if seeing with a new set of eyes, as if I wasn't bothering with my eyes at all and was looking at the world directly with my mind. The sleeping mind, some piece of me realized faintly. No longer sleeping, I thought, and smiled. I looked at Falurian, and in that moment I understood her down to the bottoms of her feet. She was of the Fae. She did not worry over right or wrong. She was a creature of pure desire, much like a child. A child does not concern itself with consequence, neither does a sudden storm. Falurian resembled both and neither. She was ancient and innocent and powerful and proud. Was this the way Elodin saw the world? Was this the magic he spoke of? Not secrets or tricks, but Tabberlin the Great magic. Always there, but beyond my seeing until now. It was beautiful. I met Falurian's eyes, and the world grew slow and sluggish. I felt as if I had been thrust under water, as if my breath had been pressed from my body. For that tiny moment, I was stunned and numb as if I had been struck by lightning. The moment passed, and things began to move again, but now, looking into Felurian's twilight eyes, I understood her far beyond the bottoms of her feet. Now I knew her to the marrow of her bones. Her eyes were like four lines of music, clearly penned. My mind was filled with the sudden song of her. I drew a breath and sang it out in four hard notes. Felurian sat upright. She passed her hand before her eyes and spoke a word as sharp as shattered glass. There was a pain like thunder in my head. Darkness flickered at the edges of my sight. I tasted blood and bitter rue. The world snapped back into focus, and I caught myself before I fell. Felurian frowned, straightened, stood. Her face intent, she took a step. Standing, she was not tall or terrible. Her head was barely level with my chin. Her dark hair hung, a sheaf of shadow, straight as a knife until it brushed against her curving hip. She was slight and pale and perfect. Never have I seen a face so sweet, a mouth so made for kissing. She was no longer frowning, not smiling either. Her lips were soft and slightly parted. She took another step. The simple motion of her moving leg was like a dance, the unexaggerated shifting of her hip entrancing as a fire. The arch of her bare foot said more of sex than anything I'd seen in my young life. Another step. Her smile was fierce and full. She was as lovely as the moon. Her power hung about her like a mantle. It shook the air. It spread behind her like a pair of vast and unseen wings. Close enough to touch, I felt her power thrumming in the air. Desire rose around me like the sea in storm. She raised her hand. She touched my chest. I shook. She met my eyes, and in the twilight written there, I saw again the four clear lines of song. I sang them out. They burst from me like birds into the open air. Suddenly, my mind was clear again. I drew a breath and held her eyes in mine. I sang again, and this time I was full of rage. I shouted out the four hard notes of song. I sang them tight and white and hard as iron. And at the sound of them, I felt her power shake, then shatter, leaving nothing in the empty air but ache and anger. Felurian gave a startled cry and sat so suddenly that it was almost like a fall. She curled her knees toward herself and huddled, watching me with wide and frightened eyes. Looking around, I saw the wind. Not the way you might see smoke or fog. I saw the ever-changing wind itself. It was familiar as the face of a forgotten friend. I laughed and spread my arms, marveling at its shifting shape. I cupped my hands and breathed a sigh into the hollow space within. I spoke a name. I moved my hands and wove my breath gossamer thin. It billowed out, engulfing her, then burst into a silver flame that trapped her tight inside its changing name. I held her there above the ground. She watched me with an air of fear and disbelief, her dark hair dancing like a second flame inside the first. I knew then that I could kill her. It would be as simple as throwing a sheet of paper to the wind. But the thought sickened me, and I was reminded of ripping the wings from a butterfly. Killing her would be destroying something strange and wonderful. A world without Felurian was a poorer world, a world I would like a little less. It would be like breaking Ilion's lute. It would be like burning down a library in addition to ending a life. On the other hand, my safety and sanity were at stake. I believed the world was more interesting with Quoth in it as well. But I couldn't kill her. Not like this. Not wielding my newfound magic like a dissecting knife. I spoke again, and the wind brought her down among the pillows. I made a tearing motion, and the silver flame that once had been my breath became three notes of broken song and went to play among the trees. I sat. She reclined. We looked each other over for several long minutes. Her eyes flashed from fear to caution to curiosity. I saw myself reflected in her eyes, naked among the cushions. My power rode like a white star on my brow. Then I began to feel a fading, a forgetting. I realized the name of the wind no longer filled my mouth, and when I looked around, I saw nothing but empty air. I tried to remain outwardly calm, but as these things left me, I felt like a lute whose strings were being cut. My heart clenched with a loss I hadn't felt since my parents died. I could see a slight shimmer in the air around Felurian, some shred of her power returning. I ignored it as I struggled frantically to keep some part of what I had learned. But it was like trying to hold a handful of sand. If you have ever dreamed of flying, then come awake, dismayed to realize you had lost the trick of it, you have some inkling how I felt. Piece by piece it faded until there was nothing left. I felt a hollow inside and ached as badly as if I'd discovered my family never loved me. I swallowed against the lump in my throat. Felurian looked at me curiously. I could still see myself reflected in her eyes, the star on my forehead no more than a pinprick of light. Then, even the perfect vision of my sleeping mind began to fade. I looked desperately at the world around me. I tried to memorize the sight of it, unblinking. Then it was gone. I bowed my head, half in grief and half to hide the tears. Chapter 98. The Lay of Felurian. A long moment passed before I regained enough of my composure to look up. There was a hesitancy in the air, as if we were young lovers who didn't know what was expected of us next, who didn't know what parts we were supposed to play. I picked up my lute and brought it close to my chest. The motion was instinctive, like clutching a wounded hand. I struck a chord out of habit, then made it minor so the lute seemed to be saying sad. Without thinking or looking up, I began to play one of the songs I had written in the months after my parents died. It was called Sitting by the Water, Remembering. My fingers strummed sorrow into the evening air. It was several minutes before I realized what I was doing, and several more before I stopped. I wasn't done with the song. I don't know if it really has an ending. I felt better. Not good by any means, but better. Less empty. My music always helped. As long as I had my music, no burden was ever too heavy to bear. I looked up and saw tears on Felurian's face. It made me less ashamed of my own. I also felt myself wanting her. The emotion was damped by the ache in my chest, but that touch of desire focused my attention on my most immediate concern, survival, escape. Felurian seemed to reach a decision and started through the cushions toward me. Moving in a cautious crawl, she stopped several feet away and looked at me.
"Does my tender poet have a name?"
Her voice was so gentle, it startled me. I opened my mouth to speak, then stopped. I thought of the moon, caught by her own name, and a thousand fairy stories I had heard as a child. If you believed Ilodin, names were the bones of the world. I hesitated for about half a second before I decided I had given Felurian a damn sight more than my name already. I am Quoth. The sound of it seemed to ground me, to put me inside myself again.
Quoth.
She spoke it softly, and it reminded me of a bird calling.
"Would you sing sweet for me again?"
She reached out slowly, as if afraid of being burned, and laid her hand lightly on my arm.
"Please. Your songs are like a caress, my Quoth."
She pronounced my name like the beginning of a song. It was lovely. However, I wasn't entirely comfortable with the way she referred to me as her Quoth. I smiled and nodded, mostly because I didn't have a better idea. I struck a couple of tuning chords, then paused, thinking. Then I started to play In the Forest Fae, a song about, of all things, Felurian herself. It wasn't particularly good. It used about 3 chords and 2 dozen words, but it had the effect I was looking for. Felurian brightened at the mention of her name. There was no false modesty in her. She knew she was most beautiful, most skilled. She knew men told stories, and she knew her reputation. No man could resist her. No man could endure her. By the end of the song, pride had her sitting straighter. I finished the song. "Would you like to hear another?" I asked. She nodded and grinned eagerly. She sat among the cushions, back straight, as regal as a queen. I moved into a second song, similar to the first. It was called Lady Fay, or something of the sort. I didn't know who had written it, but they had an appalling habit of sticking extra syllables into their lines. It wasn't bad enough to get anything thrown at me in a tavern, but it was close. I watched Felurian closely as I played. She was flattered, but I could read a slight dissatisfaction growing, as if she was irritated, but she couldn't decide why. Perfect. Last, I played a song written for Queen Seiru. I guarantee you haven't heard it, but I'm sure you know the type. Written by some toadying minstrel looking for a patronage, my father had taught it to me as an example of certain things to avoid when writing a song. It was a numbing example of mediocrity. You could tell the writer was either truly inept, had never met Seiru, or that he simply didn't find her attractive at all. While singing it, I simply exchanged the name Felurian for Seiru. I also replaced some of the better phrases with less poetic ones. By the time I was through with it, the song was truly wretched, and Felurian wore an expression of naked dismay upon her face. I sat for a long moment, as if deeply considering something. When I finally did speak, my voice was hushed and hesitant. "Lady, might I write a song for you?" I gave her a sheepish smile. Her smile was like the moon through the clouds. She clapped her hands and threw herself onto me with a kittenish delight, peppering me with kisses. Only fear that my lute might be broken kept me from properly enjoying the experience. Felurian pulled away and sat very still. I tried a couple of chord combinations, then stilled my hands and looked up at her. "I will call it The Lay of Felurian." She blushed a bit and looked at me through lowered eyes, her expression bashful and brazen. All immodest boasting aside, I write a fine song when I set my hand to it, and my skills had recently been sharpened in the mayor's employ. I am not the best, but I am one of the best. Given enough time, a worthy subject, and the proper motivation, I dare say I could write a song nearly as well as Ilion. Nearly. Closing my eyes, I coaxed sweet strains from my lute. My fingers flew, and I captured the music of wind in the branches, of rustling leaves. Then I looked to the back of my mind where the mad, chattering part of me had been composing a song to Felurian all this while. I brushed the strings more lightly and began to sing. Flashing moon silver, midnight blue her eyes. The lids were subtle-colored butterflies. Her hair swayed, a dark scythe swinging, through the trees with the wind singing. "Felurian, O lady fair, blessed be your forest glade. Your breath is light upon the air, your hair is shadow-dappled shade." Felurian grew still as I sang. Toward the end of the chorus, I could hardly tell if she was breathing. A few of the butterflies that had been frightened away by our earlier conflict came dancing back to us. One of them landed on Felurian's hand, brushing its wings once, twice, as if curious why its mistress was so sudden still. I turned my eyes to my lute again and chose notes like raindrops licking the leaves of trees. She danced in dancing shadows candle cast. She held my eyes, my face, my form full fast. Her smile a snare 10 times as strong as legendary fairy song. "O lady fair, Felurian, your kiss is honeysuckle sweet. I pity any other man, unknown to you and incomplete." I watched her from the corner of my eye. She sat as if listening with her entire body. Her eyes were wide. She'd raised one hand to her mouth, upsetting the butterfly resting there, while the other pressed against her chest as she drew a slow breath. This is what I had wanted, but I regretted it nonetheless. I bent over my lute and danced my fingers across the strings. I wove chords like water over river stones, like a soft breath against the ear. Then I steeled myself and sang. Her eyes were of the bluest black, like night sky with the clouds blown back. Her skills in love... I stuttered my fingers on the strings, pausing for just a moment as if unsure of something. I saw Felurian wake halfway from her reverie and continued. Her skills in love, they do suffice. In close embrace, men find her nice. Felurian, O mistress bright, your touch more sought than silver, What? Even though I was expecting the interruption, the ice in her voice startled me into a jangle of notes and sent several butterflies into flight. I took a breath, assumed my most innocent expression, and looked up. Her expression was a storm of rage and disbelief.
Nice?
I felt the blood drain from my face at her tone. Her voice was still round and gentle as a distant flute, but that meant nothing. Distant thunder doesn't drub the ears. You feel it prowling through your chest. The quiet of her voice moved through me in that distant thunder way.
Nice?
It was nice, I said to mollify her, my air of innocence only half affected. She opened her mouth as if she would speak, then closed her mouth. Her eyes flashed pure fury. I'm sorry, I said. I should have known better than to try. I pitched my voice somewhere between broken spirit and beaten child. I lowered my hands from the lute strings. Some of the fire left her, but when she found her voice, it was tight and dangerous.
My skills suffice?
She hardly seemed able to force out the last word. Her mouth formed a thin, outraged line. I exploded, my voice a roll of thunder. How the hell am I supposed to know? It's not like I've ever done this sort of thing before. She reeled back at the vehemence of my words, some of the anger draining out of her.
What is it you mean?
She trailed off, confused.
This!
I gestured awkwardly at myself, at her, at the cushions and the pavilion around us, as if that explained everything. The last of the anger left her as I saw realization begin to dawn.
You?
No!
I looked down, my face growing hot. I have never been with a woman. Then I straightened and looked her in the eye as if challenging her to make an issue out of it. Felurian was still for a moment. Then her mouth turned up into a wry smile.
You tell me a fairy story, my quoth.
I felt my face go grim. I don't mind being called a liar. I am. I am a marvelous liar. But I hate being called a liar when I'm telling the perfect truth. Regardless of its motivation, my expression seemed to convince her.
But you were like a gentle summer storm.
She made a fluttering gesture with a hand.
You were a dancer fresh upon the field.
Her eyes glittered wickedly. I tucked that comment away for later ego-polishing purposes. My reply was slightly wounded.
Please, I'm not a complete rube. I've read several books.
Felurian giggled like a brook.
You learned from books?
She looked at me as if she couldn't decide whether or not to take me seriously. She laughed, stopped, then laughed again. I didn't know if I should be offended.
You were rather good, too,
I said hurriedly, knowing I sounded like the last dinner guest to compliment her on a salad.
As a matter of fact, I've read books. Books. You compare me with books.
Her anger crashed over me. Then, without even pausing for breath, Felurian laughed again, high and delighted. Her laugh was wild as a fox's cry, clear and sharp as morning birdsong. It was no human sound. I put on my innocent face.
Isn't it always like this?
I kept my expression calm, while inwardly I braced myself for another outburst.
She simply sat. I am Felurian.
It wasn't a simple stating of a name. It was a declaration. It was a proud flag flying. I held her eyes for a moment, then sighed and dropped my gaze to my lute.
I'm sorry about the song. I didn't mean to offend you.
It was more lovely than the setting sun, she protested, sounding close to tears. But nice?
The words seemed bitter to her. I set my lute back into its case.
I'm sorry. I can't fix it without some basis for comparison, I sighed.
Pity. It was a good song. They would have sung it for 1,000 years. My voice was thick with regret. Felurian's expression brightened as if with an idea. Then her eyes narrowed into slits. She looked at me as if she was trying to read something written on the inside of my skull. She knew. She knew I was holding the unfinished song as ransom. The unspoken messages were clear. Unless I leave, I can never finish the song. Unless I leave, no one will ever hear these beautiful words I have made for you. Unless I leave and taste the fruits mortal women have to offer, I'll never know how skilled you truly are. There, amid the cushions, under the eternal twilight sky, Felurian and I stared at each other. She held a butterfly, and my hand rested on the smooth wood of my lute. Two armored knights eyeing each other across a bloody field could not have matched the intensity of our stare. Felurian spoke slowly, gauging my response.
If you go, will you finish it?
I tried to look surprised, but I wasn't fooling her. I nodded.
Will you come back to me and sing it?
My surprise became genuine. I hadn't considered her asking for that. I knew there would be no leaving the second time. I hesitated, but only for a barest moment. Half a loaf is better than none. I nodded.
Promise?
I nodded again.
Promise with kisses?
She closed her eyes and tilted her head back, like a flower basking in the sun. Life is too short to refuse offers like that. I moved toward her, drew her naked body toward my own, and kissed her as well as my limited practice would allow. It seemed to be good enough. As I pulled away, she looked up at me and sighed.
Your kisses are like snowflakes on my lips.
She lay back on the cushions, head resting on her arm. Her free hand brushed my cheek. To say she was lovely is such an understatement, I cannot begin to repair it. I realized that over the last several minutes, she hadn't been trying to make me desire her, at least not in any supernatural sense. She brushed her lips lightly over the palm of my hand and released it. Then she lay still, watching me intently. I was flattered. To this day, I know of only one answer to a question so politely phrased. I bent to kiss her, and laughing, she took me in her arms.
Chapter 99, Magic of a Different Kind. By this point in my life, I'd earned myself a modest reputation. No, that's not entirely true. It's better to say that I had built myself a reputation. I'd crafted it deliberately. I'd cultivated it. 3/4 of the stories folk told about me at the university were ridiculous rumors I'd started myself. I spoke 8 languages. I could see in the dark. When I was 3 days old, my mother hung me in a basket from a rowan tree by the light of the full moon. That night a fairy laid a powerful charm on me to always keep me safe. It turned my eyes from blue to leafy green. I knew how stories worked, you see. Nobody believed that I'd traded a cupped handful of my own fresh blood to a demon in exchange for an alar like a blade of Ramsden steel. But still,
I was the highest-ranked duelist in Dahl's class. On a good day, I could beat any two of them together. That thread of truth wove through the story, gave it strength. So, even though you might not believe it, you might tell it to a wide-eyed first-term student with a drink in him, just to watch his face, just for fun. And if you'd had a drink or three yourself, you might begin to wonder. And so, the story spread. And so, around the university at least, my tiny reputation grew. There were a few true stories as well. Pieces of my reputation I'd honestly earned. I had rescued Fella from a blazing inferno. I had been whipped in front of a crowd and refused to bleed. I'd called the wind and broken Ambrose's arm. Still, I knew my reputation was a coat spun out of cobweb. It was storybook nonsense. There were no demons out there, bargaining for blood. There were no helpful fairies granting magic charms, and though I might pretend, I knew I was no Taberlin the Great. These were my thoughts when I woke, tangled in Felurian's arms. I lay quietly among the cushions for a time, her head resting lightly on my chest, her leg thrown loosely over mine. Looking up through the trees at the twilight sky, I realized I could not recognize the stars. They were brighter than those in the mortal sky, their patterns unfamiliar. It was only then that I realized my life had taken a step in a new direction. Up until now, I had been playing at being a young Taberlin. I had spun lies around myself, pretending to be a storybook hero. But now, there was no sense pretending. What I'd done was truly worth a story, every bit as odd and wonderful as any tale of Taberlin himself. I'd followed Felurian into the Fey, then bested her with magics I couldn't explain, let alone control. I felt different now. More solid, somehow. Not older, exactly. Not wiser. But I knew things that I'd never known before. I knew the Fey were real. I knew their magic was real. Felurian could break a man's mind with a kiss. Her voice could tug me like a puppet by its strings. There were things I could learn here. Strange things. Powerful things. Secret things. Things I might never ever have a chance to learn again. I gently freed myself from Felurian's sleeping embrace and walked down to the nearby pool. I splashed water on my face and scooped up several handfuls to drink. I looked through the plants that grew at the water's edge. I picked some leaves and chewed them as I considered how I might approach the subject with Felurian. The mint sweetened my breath. When I returned to the pavilion, Felurian was standing there, brushing pale fingers through her long, dark hair. I handed her a violet, its color dark as her eyes. She smiled at me and ate it. I decided to approach the subject gently, lest I offend her. "I was wondering," I said carefully, "if you would be willing to teach me." She reached out to touch the side of my face gently.
"Foolish sweet," she said fondly. "Have not I already begun?"
I felt excitement rise in my chest, amazed that it could be so simple. "Am I ready for my next lesson?" I asked. Her smile grew wider, and she looked me up and down, her eyes going half-lidded and mysterious.
"Are you?"
I nodded.
"It is good you are eager,"
Felurian said, her fluting voice tinged with amusement.
"You have some cleverness and natural skill, but there is much to learn."
She looked into my eyes, her delicate face gravely serious.
"When you leave to walk among the mortal, I will not have you shame me."
Felurian took my hand and drew me into the pavilion. She pointed.
"Sit."
I sat on a cushion, placing my head level with the smooth expanse of her stomach. Her navel was terribly distracting. She looked down at me, her expression proud and regal as a queen.
"A Mawen,"
she said, spreading the fingers of one hand and making a deliberate gesture.
"This we call the hushed heart, an easy lesson to begin, and one I expect you will enjoy.
Valorian smiled at me then, her eyes old and knowing. And even before she pushed me back against the cushions and began